Hey there, are you looking for more of a multidisciplinary approach to pediatric therapy? Whether you are a clinician or a parent or just a community partner interested in pediatric therapy, this podcast is for you. We examine a variety of topics, looking at it from all angles. On this podcast, we'll have a panel of 2 to 3 participants talking about a variety of topics that we get from our Facebook group. So we have 2 different Facebook groups that you can join. One is specifically for clinicians only, and that's called the Peds Therapy Collective. The other group is more of a parent empowerment group. We're looking to help encourage and empower parents to understand that they have everything they need within them right now to help their child. And just for a little bit of support, we have our clinicians there in the group to help give guidance and point you in the right direction, get you down that right path to feeling successful with working with your child in whatever therapy they need, whether it's speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, maybe they're seeing a vision therapist, maybe they're working with an ABA therapist. Wherever you are right now, maybe your child is dealing with dyslexia, autism, ADHD, we really want to support you because our pediatric therapists have many specialties, and we're here to help kind of bring everybody's knowledge together and offer that to you, and also offer it to our clinicians so that we can better educate ourselves and really grow as professionals. So sit back and listen to our episode. On today's episode of the Peds Therapy Collective, we are going to be talking with Vicki Mackinder, who is an occupational therapist from Nevada, also one of my very good friends. And we're just going to have a little discussion about sensory regulation for adults and for children, as well as what things have changed for us as therapists before and after kids. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Peds Therapy Collective. Today we're going to have a really unique conversation with Vicki Mackinder, who's an occupational therapist, and hopefully we'll be talking about what it means to be a therapist before and after having kids, and how can, even therapists who maybe will never have children or not have children yet, how they can kind of take on that perspective of being a parent. So, welcome to the podcast, and we'll get started here. Vicki, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm an occupational therapist, and before I was an occupational therapist, I was a teacher for 5 years. I have 2 kids, 3.5 and 1. And we recently moved to Nevada and used to work with Christine in Denver.
Well, thanks. Welcome. And so happy to talk with you and get this chance to chat, because I know Mona and I both miss you, Vicki. But
yes, I know, just talking to you for a few minutes, I was like, oh man, I miss the collaboration.
Well, that's okay, but that's what we have this this podcast for, and the Facebook group, to really build that collaboration. So if you're not part of the Facebook group, go ahead and check out the Peds Therapy Collective, and that's for clinicians and providers. There's also a Peds Therapy Collective Global, where we're inviting parents to come into that group as well, because even though it's super important, really great that you as parents have a place to go and ask questions of one another, I wanted to provide a safe space for you to come and ask clinicians directly. Even if you're not currently working with a provider, you can at least get a starting point. So that's the main goals of the Peds Therapy Collective Global. And then, like Vicki said, that collaboration piece of it, I think it's just really important, especially in home health, or if you're doing outpatient visits in the home, you live on this little island. So it's important for us to come together and collaborate. We were just talking before we started recording about sensory regulation and reflex integration. And I was just giving a little bit of overview of what I've learned in the past few years. So I guess I'll just recap that there before we move on to the main topic for today. So we have 10 ways that we receive information from our environment. So we use our sensory system all of the time. That's how we learn about our experiences, not only from our outside world, but from within us. So we have our five senses that we know about. And then we have that proprioceptive sense, how I know how hard to grip an object without breaking it, how hard to jump down from the bottom step and land. Yesterday I was in a class after school teaching kids about proprioception, and I gave them a kind of a plasticky cup filled to the brim of water. And I said, we're going to pass it around a circle, but don't spill it. And we passed it around the circle, and they all did well. And I asked them, well, how do you know how hard to squeeze that cup? They're like, well, don't squeeze it at all. I said, exactly. That's your proprioceptive sense. And then I had them close their eyes and do that. And they had to do it.
Oh gosh.
Much more slowly. Melanie actually got some spilled on her. So just teaching kids about that, because it is like, what do you mean proprioception? What does that mean? And then our vestibular sense, how we know where we are in space based off of the position of our head. And the one I do for that, again, I'll have them close their eyes and I'll ask them to turn around completely in a circle and stop once they've made that complete circle. And they do. Mm-hmm. And how do you know where you are? And they're like, oh, I can feel my feet. I counted my steps. Okay, well, that may be true, but we use our vestibular sense. How does a gymnast know to open up and do her layout or his layout and land at the right time? How does a diver know how many turns they've made before they enter the water? All of those is due to our vestibular sense. And of course, we can have the actual organ not working correctly. Like, there could be an actual problem with my eyes. There could be an actual problem with me not being able to feel with my fingers or my feet, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how we're processing that information. Okay, so we've got those at 7. Then we have our interoceptive sense, which is being talked about more and more now. I used to describe it, well, Vicky, how would you describe interoception?
Oh gosh. Well, I think just like feeling like inside your body, like those, like, can you feel hunger or not feel hunger? Can you feel pain? Can you not feel pain? Those are kind of the big ones that I see a lot in the interception area.
Right. And that's exactly what I was thinking as well. And then I started learning more about how our neurotransmitters, our hormones play a role too. And I guess, you know, when we think about how well do you use and integrate that sensory information, some people have no awareness of how they're feeling from that. And other people have a lot of awareness. So, you know, for women especially, during that time of the month, your attitude changes, perhaps. Do you have an awareness that that's happening or not? Are you able to use that information to be like, oh, I really do need to take a break today? Or are you completely oblivious? And then we can think about our children too, what they're eating. If you know, my gosh, I'll tell you, my children eat just as much sugar as other kids. That's fine. But so I'm not preaching about not feeding your kids sweets, but how does that make them feel on the inside, and can they control that or not?
Yeah, I've seen that connection with mine as well. When she eats too much sugar, I'm like, oh, we've eaten too much sugar.
Yeah,
because she can't control.
Exactly. So, and then we have an interpersonal sense. I feel like I have a very strong interpersonal sense in respect to when I don't feel comfortable with somebody, I cannot function. So the best example that I can give is my last CI in physical therapy school, my last clinical instructor. I was at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Hospital in Chicago, and she
she and I did not have a very good interpersonal relationship. And so I did not show her what I could do. I was nervous. I felt very tense around her. And she called in my director and said, we are either going to fail you or you need to stop the clinical. So I stopped the clinical and had to do the clinical all over again with the wife of the director of the program, which she and I luckily had a very good interpersonal.
Got along.
And I felt safe with her and I passed and I'm a physical therapist. Hooray. But yeah. I mean, that interpersonal sense, if you don't have a perception of safety with who you're talking with or who you're dealing with, you mm-hmm. can't do your best.
And I just, I watched this conference. I think I mentioned to you, Christine, the Happily Family Conference. They had Dan Siegel on there from the Whole Brain Child, No Drama Discipline. I think the Yes Brain. Mm-hmm. I mean, he talked a lot about, he has four S's. And that safe, secure, two of them are safe, secure, seen, and soothed. And so, I mean, basically he was saying, if you don't feel safe, you're not going to be able to function.
Absolutely. And he talks a lot about the upstairs brain, the downstairs brain. And so you're going to be stuck in that downstairs brain if you're not feeling a sense of safety or those other S's.
Yep.
We expect our kids, we expect adults to function in the upstairs brain. That of course is the goal.
Right.
But if we're not getting those basic needs met, and how do we understand our environment is through these 10 senses. That's right. Though his books are great. And he's got a variety of books that speak to different age groups, that speak to adults and children. So he's definitely a great author, to read or listen to. the other sense that we have then is our intuitive sense. And we talk about like being able to be open to feeling this. So how do you feel in an environment or with a situation, not necessarily with a person, but are you tuning into what's going on? And this is, again, for children, especially today with TV, iPads, classrooms of 30 kids, how can we expect our children to really tune into how they feel in an environment when they're being bombarded with so much stimulus that intuitive sense,
right.
We're not able to access that, or they're reaching a threshold in one of the other 9 senses that doesn't make them feel safe.
Right.
So those are our 10 senses, and we need to be able to feel okay receiving information through any of those ways in order to use our upstairs brain.
Right.
And that's where this the reflex integration comes in there, because when we think about our primary reflexes to help protect us as infants and to help lay the foundation for our motor function, our sensory ability to take in that information and then use that upstairs brain, if we don't have that pathway well solidified, the rest of it isn't going to make sense to us at some point. So I guess,
yes,
you know,
I agree.
Right. Right. But
yes,
we don't, like you're
perfect at saying that.
Oh, well, I've thought about it a lot. So I'll ask you, Vicky, is there some sort of sensory stimulus that you cannot stand?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking earlier about, like, it's not that I can't stand it, but, like, I do notice, like, if someone's shaking their leg, like, under the table, or chewing loudly. But I think, you know, sometimes when I look at myself, it's like maybe I'm not regulated. So, like, those things get heightened when I'm not regulated either. So they probably won't, they probably don't bother me if I'm better regulated.
So why can't you control that all the time, Vicky?
Because we are moving in and out of our senses all the time, and there's different environments coming, at our brain, and we have to kind of process all of that, and then, you know, ebbs and flows, and then we have to notice that our bodies aren't at the optimal arousal level, and then we have to give our bodies input that we need to calm or regulate.
Yeah, you hit on
that would be my answer.
Well, no, but you hit on some really key points, because you have to be aware of what's happening to then make a decision about if you need more input or less input.
And right. And usually, for me, it's usually if I'm stressed or hungry.
Yeah, and so why would it be any different for our kids?
Right.
I think we
wouldn't.
We want them to behave all of the time, and we want them to listen. And I agree, I want my children to listen too, but we have to understand that their little bodies are, our prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed until what, 25?
Right. Yep.
So all before that period, they're still in process. And so if we expect them, we're coming at them like, use your brain, use your wizard brain. But their lizard brains are so disorganized. How are they going to get to use that? I mean, it just, yes, that's what we want. But if we don't support both sides of it, it's going to be such a struggle. And I guess, you know, as a physical therapist, this has always been an area of interest in mine, because I would walk into a home and the child is not even able to attend to what I'm trying to do with their bodies. And I was like, okay, OT, please.
Yeah.
But at some point, you can't pass that off, because how do you accept, can't separate the child's sensory system from their motor system.
Correct.
So I felt, if I don't get more information for myself, how do I really help these kids and the parents? Because Vicky's not always around.
Right. And I do see that a lot, where other providers, especially in my new role here, will be like, oh, it must be sensory. It must be sensory. Bring in the OT. And yeah, it's a processing. It doesn't, like, I can't just do one activity and I can't make it better in, you know, my session. It has to be kind of carried out throughout the whole day, or, you know, over several days, or with another provider. And I also hear, like, I have one little boy, and I have a good, I'm going to probably mess up which sense it is, interpersonal relationship with him. And so he likes me, and so he plays well with me. But when the speech therapist comes, mom has told me that relationship's not as strong, and so he doesn't do as much for the speech therapist.
Yep, absolutely.
So,
yeah, no, for sure. And that's something that we can't obviously have the ideal relationship with everybody, but perhaps there's something that that other provider can do to help soften and help gain his trust.
Right.
Obviously, she's not a dangerous person, but he's
right. Correct. Right.
I was going to say something about. Oh, well, we're going to go to the path of least resistance, right? So the child who is already in their sensory system, kind of not being regulated, or things are. Their baseline is just to not enjoy a certain sensory system. That's the pathway that has laid down for them. And it's like, if you're driving in the snow, is it easier to follow the person ahead of you or make your own path?
Right.
And the more
follow the person.
Right. Yeah. And the more people that drive that, or the more times that path is used, the deeper that path is. And here we are as therapists, or as parents, coming and saying, no, use this other path.
Right. And it's foreign to them. Yeah. And not comfortable and not safe.
Exactly. And we as adults are no different, but you know, think about changing a habit that you want to change, or starting a new diet, or why do you go back to your old behaviors? Because they're familiar, they're safe, and that pathway is well myelinated.
Right. Right.
But like you said, if the other therapists can help understand what's going on sensory wise, if the parents can help the child just meet that threshold and have a positive experience to feel safe, we can start to make progress toward integrating these reflexes. But if we're always crossing that threshold, we're always throwing that child out of a calm and alert state. No new mm-hmm. learning is taking place when we are out of a calm and alert state.
Correct.
So, and again, it doesn't matter if you are 2 or 102.
Right.
You cannot learn, you are not listening or attending well if you are not in a calm and alert state. So.
Yes, you're correct. That's a good point.
Anything else you wanted to add about sensory processing, or what you wish other therapists understood, or parents?
I missed the first part.
Is there anything else you wanted to add or pass on to other therapists, other parents, about sensory processing?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You did a good job explaining that.
We did a good job explaining it. All right, let's go ahead and switch over to our main topic for today. So, you know, I had briefly worked as a physical therapist with pediatrics prior to having my son, and I knew it very much from a book level, right, of what's supposed to happen. And you really need to work with your kid like 3 times a day on this exercise. And gosh, what else are you doing? You're at home all day with him.
Right.
Right. And then I had my kids. And then I was the mom who the speech therapist came over and I sat at the sink and did my dishes. Now, at the end of the session, I did go back in and figure out what I needed to work on. But my gosh, you know, this was a time for me to complete some tasks, and he worked so much better with her. So why not?
And I immediately went to like, oh, your sensory system needed a break.
Right. Right? That too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Because adults, we do. So it was a big shift to understand it from the other side. I jotted down some notes before we got on here. You know, time is a big thing, but also just feeling the responsibility of being to raise your child as this perfect kid or the best kid, and just that responsibility and feeling like things aren't.
School is canceled.
Yes, school is canceled. That's true.
That's fantastic.
Feeling like you can't, like what's wrong with me as a parent, and having a feeling that you're not doing enough, but yet there's so many things to do as a parent. I mean, it's overwhelming. And I think as a therapist from the outside, you might look at that parent and be like, well, they don't really care, or, you know, they're not, whatever, 1,000 different excuses of why they may not be following through with your plan.
Right. But
most likely, none of the reasons that you as a therapist are thinking about are actually what's going on in the parent's head.
Right. And I think we often, like, you know, tell parents to do activities for the younger kids during diaper changes. And right now, my 1-year-old, to change a diaper, it's like wrestling an alligator. There is nothing, like, I get in and get out as quick as I can. There is no like enjoyment in changing the diaper, or you doing it right before you're running. Oh, we have to leave. We're 5 minutes late already. Oh, I'm supposed to do that activity. Oh, next diaper change. I'll do it next time.
Yep. No, absolutely. And it sounds, when we are in a calm and alert state in the session, talking with the mom or dad about what we should be doing. Yes, it sounds great, but in the moment, that's a whole different animal. Oops. I'm getting a message about my next patient, but I'll give her a call back. So anyway, I think that is definitely, if I had, you know, one piece of information to give to a therapist who is not a parent, is to be able just to step back and understand that even if you're trying to be routines based, the information that you're providing still may cause a lot of stress for the mom or dad. Mm-hmm. And to maybe really talk with them about, you know, how they would actually want to incorporate this activity, or get their input first before we mm-hmm. offer, or even just asking that question, do you want some help with that?
Right.
I'm very fast to give my take on it, but maybe the parent is cool with what's happening. So who am I to say?
Oh, I lost you for a minute.
That's okay. I said, maybe the parent is cool with what's happening and they don't even want my advice. So.
Right. Yeah. They have to be ready to work on it before they can work on it.
Right. Or even think that it's something that needs to be addressed at this moment. Or if you really feel strongly as a therapist that this is what needs to be done, then you can, show the parent what's possible. And again, like you said, they may work very differently for the therapist one-on-one than they do with the parent for a variety of reasons.
Right.
Maybe there's things that you as a therapist right now just need to work on, and the parent works on other things. Or the parent, you know, the parent's main job is really just providing that safe, secure place and providing unconditional love. We talk about
right.
Back to Dan Siegel and that attachment and just feeling safe. And 0 to 3 is that time to really support those attachments and just feel like there is, I'm always safe with my mom and dad.
Right. And I think another point too is when I was in physical therapy, and I was doing my exercises and I'm like, wait, this isn't working right. You know, parents might not understand the activity or understand why you're doing it. They don't feel comfortable doing it. So understanding like their level of comfortability doing the activity, and if they're like, oh yeah, it's going fine, they might not be doing it because it doesn't always go as planned.
Exactly. No, that's so true. And just kind of checking in, and no pressure on the parent, you know, making sure that they understand that if it didn't work out this week, that's all right. How can we make it fit into your schedule better? Or what do you really need this week? Because sometimes they can't
right.
add anything else onto their plate.
Or I was trying to, you leave and the parent says, yes, I can do it. And then like the kid gets sick and you come back and they're like, oh, it was just a horrible week. And having a horrible week myself this week with no sleep, just understanding that when, you know, life doesn't go as it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
Kids get sick or something happens, you don't have time to work on those skills for that week.
Absolutely. And you also were speaking about like the exercises. And so for the activities and exercises for us, I'm always upgrading, downgrading exercises in the moment that it's
right.
just a natural process for me. And some parents are really good at that and other parents aren't. They,
especially, right. They're very black and white.
Or if it's always been easy for you, you would think, why can't the child do this? If something's always
right.
been easy, you don't know how to break it down. And that is going to come across for many years to come, that if something was super easy for you, you're not going to be like, oh, this is how I, so if you're the contrary, if something is challenging for you, you might've thought of different ways to get it done. but maybe you still need some help with understanding exactly whatever. So it goes both ways. But I think parents should need to hopefully feel safe with the therapist, the provider in the home, that you can ask questions about some other options. If you, from a parent side, is maybe taking a little video of you working with the child and showing the therapist in the session. So if you really are uncomfortable demonstrating in front of the therapist, even though that's what we want to see you actually do it. But if that's making you feel unsafe, take a video and we can watch it together.
Right.
Do you have any other suggestions of how parents can kind of feel better about the information coming in from the therapist?
Well, I was just thinking of saying something about, you know, it is kind of hard to hear things that are wrong with your kids. So really building up the parents' confidence and telling them, the same little kid I was talking about earlier, I hadn't seen him for a couple of weeks. I was like, he's making great progress. He's making new sounds. He's, you know, mom wants him talking, but he's not talking. But he said like 3 or 4 new sounds I'd never heard before. And I was like, I think, you know, we are making progress and you're doing a great job. And the mom's like, I don't feel like anything's changed. You know, so really hopefully when, you know, bring up the progress and the positives that the kid is doing, it helps boost the parents' confidence. That they're doing a good job and all their efforts are paying off.
Absolutely. And I think to myself, no matter whether we're helping a child with their physical body or if you're seeing a provider to help them with emotions or as they get older to learn to read or in school, like those people are trained to look for these nuances. As a parent, you know, my sons both needed speech therapy. I was not trained to understand how speech and language develop and what things come before the next and what things to look for. So, you know, those are all key things to have that provider saying, yes, you're doing awesome with this. And here, listen for that next time. And these are the building blocks that we need. The other thing I stress to parents is that progress is progressive. That's kind of redundant, but it's not linear. So it doesn't just keep going up and up and up at the same pace across everything. So even if, you know, you had a win this week because the child slept through the night, but you didn't get any of the activities done, like that's your win. Enjoy that. And that's okay. That's good enough.
Right.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap.
I like that analogy that it's not all linear.
Exactly. That's true for all of us. But again, like you mentioned, like this pressure you want your kid to do X, Y, and Z so badly that sometimes it's hard to see those nuances or those small bits of progress. All right, Miss Vicki, is there anything else we should talk about today?
I don't think so.
You're very
thank you for having me and chatting with me.
No, thank you for coming on and chatting with me. So, and you too can join the conversation. So if you would like to get on and team a kid or get some feedback from other therapists, I would invite you on as well. It's super simple to do, right, Vicki? Simple to get online with me.
Sounds good.
All right.
Oh, your cat ear is kind of canning out. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was asking
if everyone got everything you had to say.
I was just asking if it was simple to get online with me this morning.
Oh yeah, sorry. It was very simple. Yes, I just signed on to the app and put in my number and within minutes. So yeah, it was very simple process. Absolutely. I would recommend coming and talking with Christine.
Thank you. Yeah, I have to apologize if the connection was poor this morning. There is a bit of a snowstorm in Denver today, and technical problems sometimes do arise. All right, have a great day, Vicki.
Yeah, stay warm.
Bye.
One more thing my mom wants to say.
So I wanted to let everybody know that MNRI is going to be teaching a class here in Denver, Archetype Movement Integration, coming up the weekend of March 20th through the 22nd. You can look on their website, MNRI, and look under the course registration for more details. But I just want to know, anybody who is more interested in learning about sensory processing and how that affects the sensory, motor, and cognitive development, how it affects our neurotransmitters, how it affects our hormones, our immune system, all of this is based in reflex integration. And I know that seems kind of out there and hard to believe right now, but the science is there. They've got some really great research studies on their website. You can check that out. And I would love to see you here in Denver for the Archetype Movement Integration. It is one of the preliminary classes, so no prerequisite is required, and it's open for parents, it's open for therapists, psychologists, teachers. It's kids. A really, well, kids can't come, but it's for kids. So it's definitely going to be something that I'll be using every day. I've already been using all the techniques I learned in November from the last course, and excited to learn more tools for my toolbox. So please join us.